I'm Nikki Lesprince, and I'm super passionate about having conversations around wellness, whether it be physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual. I believe these conversations build connection and offer insights to others for options they could try if they're struggling in any area of their life. I am a wife, a mama of five, and I'm building my dreams of living a holistic life, educating on massage therapy, and continuing to grow Encompass Wellness Studio, where we offer customized massage therapy, holistic products and gifts, and other therapies to serve those in my community the best way I know how, through body work. I do all of this in the tiny town in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We are here to have in-depth, open conversations, to learn about the different options of taking care of yourself so that you can feel great and lead a life you desire. We'll discuss everything from chiropractic care to relationships. So get comfy, come open-minded, and prepare to learn about options you've never tried. This is the Journey to Wellness podcast. Let's dive in. Before we dive into this episode, I just want to put the little caveat in. I am with my niece today, so if you hear a little bit of grunting in the background, just know that she's with me, which is perfect for this podcast on parenting. I think it's so funny how everything just works out so perfectly. So I hope you enjoy this episode and enjoy the little grunts from my niece who is in the background.
Hi, Irene. Welcome to the Journey to Wellness podcast. I'm so happy to have you here. Thanks for hopping on.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Why don't you just start with telling everybody kind of who you are, what you do, and a little bit about parenting coaching, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So my journey has been kind of all over the place in a way. As you know, I started as a parent coach, and that evolved in different ways, but not really. And I will say that because most of the parents I worked with, it was not really about the child or the child's behavior. It was about their journey. And so as that evolved, I work with a lot of anxiety now. I do a lot with human design and the gene keys. And so it was always like, I still have moms that I work with. And a lot of times we are working on something that triggered them related to their children. But parent coaching to me is really about parenting being the ultimate personal development journey. So I know it was for me, and that's kind of what started me on this journey to parent coaching. So I'm a coach. I'm a EFT practitioner, tapping practitioner. I am a human design reader. I am a student of gene keys. So it's like all of these things coming together to be able to support moms and women to find that inner calm in whatever circumstances that would be. And the way that that can be powerful is whether my child is 2 and I'm dealing with those behaviors, or my child is 13 and I'm dealing with those, if I have the foundations down, I'm going to be able to approach it in a way that maintains the connection with my child versus needing them to change or do something so that I can be calm. I cannot yell. I can whatever it is that I'm wanting to do.
Yeah. So the work becomes much more about how we react versus how our kid changes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of taking it back a little bit, we met through coaching with Lisa and Kayla, who have also been on this podcast.
Awesome.
And so we met that way. And I just knew I wanted at that time, I wanted some more direct work with like my parenting and how I was responding to my kids and what that was looking like and why I was reacting by yelling versus doing something else. And I just remember so much of that was taking a moment to just like relax, like not relax, I guess, but taking a moment to be conscious before I responded. And that was, it's the hardest work, but it's some of the most important work, because if you can do that, if you can train yourself, it does take training, but if you can train yourself to do that, oftentimes you find you can respond differently versus reacting with yelling.
Absolutely.
Agree?
Absolutely. And then the response you get is completely different.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so if I can pause, yes, if I can pause and be intentional with my response, it's going to create a completely different energetic connection with my child so that their defenses aren't going up and they're reacting to my reaction. Because a lot of times kids aren't saying no to what we're asking. They're saying no to the energy with which we are asking. So if I can ground myself and be present and then ask from a place of intention, from a place of compassion, from a place of meeting them where they're at versus what I need them to do. And beyond just that pause, it's also understanding, what am I needing in that moment? Is that need actually have anything to do with them? So I actually homeschool my kids now. We started in 2020, and the first 2 years were not fun, to tell you the truth. And what it came down to was, I realized is that I was pushing them in ways to perform in the school we were doing that was taking all of the joy out of it, all of the exploration, because I could not be a disappointment as a teacher to my, like, it was still like to my, like, I couldn't be a disappointment to my dad, which comes from my childhood, right? In my schoolwork. So I needed my children to behave so that I didn't feel like a disappointment. It actually had nothing to do with them. And once I discovered that, it wasn't just the pause. It was the, oh, am I needing this for me? Am I needing them to perform a certain way for me? And then that pause becomes even deeper when we can understand that. And then we can meet them where they're at versus trying to force them in the direction we think we need them to go.
Yeah. And we don't even realize that we are forcing them for that reason. Like, we just know we have to, right? Like you said, when you got more introspective, it's like, whoa, that actually just came from my childhood. And I find that so interesting, because I probably around the same time with just looking and exploring these things, it's like, I would be like, you guys stop doing that, or stop yelling, or stop whatever the thing is. And then I'd be like, does that actually matter? Do I actually care if they are doing XYZ or making a bigger mess or yelling like kids are supposed to yell? And so once you become more aware of the way you are responding, you get to change it in whatever way you'd like.
Absolutely. Whether it's to set a boundary, because something does need to, if it's safety or something along those lines, then I do need to step in. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, is it that I'm really just needing some quiet right now? And so do I need to remove myself from the situation or put headphones on or whatever the case that I need to do, versus, again, trying to get them to do a certain thing. But it's also recognizing that if we have a bigger reaction that the moment is warranted, it's not about the present moment. It's something from our childhood. If it's a big response, like if you're running late because your child's not getting their shoes on, it's not about them not getting their shoes on. It's about the relationship you have with being on time, so to speak, or letting people down, or not meeting expectations, right? So all of those things are coming into play, and your child's behavior is triggering that wound in you.
Yes.
But they're the mirror. They're the mirror to show, or they're the flashlight, is so to speak, to show you exactly like, oh, wow, there's something here that never had a chance to mature. There's something here that is tied to beliefs that I may not even carry. There's something here that I'm trying to still make others happy. Mm-hmm. And when we can take it even a step deeper from just, you know, sometimes the pause is, wow, I'm reacting really big to this. I don't know why right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm still going to pause and just take a moment. And then the work is, you know, I can go deeper, and then I can, you know, detach myself from those triggers. I mean, there's things that my kids used to trigger me about all the time that now just don't even get me, because I don't have those buttons anymore. Like, if we don't have, you know, the saying goes, my kid's pushing my buttons. Well, if you didn't have those buttons,
right,
they couldn't push them. The buttons that they're pushing are buttons that you have inside of you. And rather than getting them to stop pushing those buttons, it's about understanding those buttons.
Yes. Yes. I love that analogy. It's so spot on. So I want to go into, a little bit about, like, so you mentioned a lot of women have anxiety, and you have used more like tapping and human design. How have those things, why did those things come into your practice or your coaching to evolve it? Do you see a lot of moms have babies and then start anxiety, or did anxiety happen all along? And then it just got, like you said, it's shown the flashlight on it once they had the kids, or what are, I guess, starting in that place, what were you seeing there?
Honestly, I think it could be any or all. I think women could have anxiety prior, and parenting can increase that for many reasons. I mean, anxiety is stress in the body. Like anytime we have stress, well, if I have a new baby, I'm not sleeping. That's more stress. So my ability to cope with my anxiety goes down. So it seems like I have more anxiety, but it could be related to that. It could be that I'm managing okay, and then I have a child and all of this childhood wounding that I wasn't even really aware of because I had suppressed it so well before this now comes to the surface. So it's like, well, I wasn't anxious before I had a child. It's like, oh, I was just really good at pushing that stuff down. So I think there can be any road to that, because I think as women, we carry a lot of wounding around expectations and taking care of others and selflessness and people pleasing and things like that. And so where EFT and human design came into this was twofold. So, you know, some clients did really well with coaching and being able to change, you know, shift mindsets. And a lot of times that may be clients that had more background in personal development, so to speak. But I have other clients that the coaching, it wasn't changing things. And so I needed other tools. And so EFT came into play. They both actually kind of came into play at the same time, but I'll go into one at a time. So EFT or tapping actually can calm the stress response. And not only does it calm the stress response, but it allows us to go into trauma. It allows us to go into anxiety and kind of see what's driving it, getting to the root, because we can keep the nervous system calm while we're doing it. And so it creates a level of acceptance for where we're at, while also telling our body, like, oh, when my child is screaming at the top of their lungs and my nervous system is being ignited because my dad used to scream, I now have a tool to calm my body to tell me that right here, right now, I am safe. Like as a four-year-old, I did not feel safe when my dad was yelling, but right here, right now, my child is yelling, I am safe. So I have this tool and we can detangle ourselves from those triggers so that those buttons aren't pushed, so to speak. So we put memories in the past rather than reliving them in the present moment, which is what you're doing in those reactions. You're reliving, because memories are encoded in our bodies, right? And they will express as reactions. And so we can detangle from that. And tapping is a phenomenal tool to be able to do that. Whether it's small T trauma or the big stuff, it can really help you to regulate. And so that combined with, so human design has been phenomenal, and the gene keys have been phenomenal in understanding what drives reactions and almost helping my clients to have permission to be who they are, see themselves differently, accept who they are. Well, of course I people please because I have this open emotional solar plexus. Like I literally feel the emotions of others, right? It's also been a game changer with knowing my children's human design, because I have one child with a defined emotional solar plexus. He has an emotional wave. When he's low on his wave and he's not fun to be around, I can just say, oh, it looks like we need some time alone right now. You're low on your wave. I don't attach anything to it. I don't need him to be any different than he is. And then my other son, who is the only open emotional solar plexus in the house, me, my husband, and my other son, it was huge to teach him. He's not responsible for anyone else's emotions. And so now I have an 11-year-old that when I'm having a hard day, he will come up to me and be like, it looks like you're kind of frustrated. Do you need a hug or do you need some space? Because he's not attached to it. He doesn't have to fix it. He didn't do anything wrong to create this. So it's been huge knowing them. It's been huge in my relationship with my husband, knowing he has an open root center. I have a defined. So he's going to feel pressure. Like literally if I'm like, oh, the dishes need to be done, what he hears is do them now. Right. And he like reacts to me. And I'm just like, don't let your open root come all over this. Right. Like I don't have to react to that because he's not yelling at me. So it's been phenomenal in my own family, but also working with clients. Typically the way I use human design is we'll be working on an issue and I'll look at the design and I can just see where the shadows are coming into play. Like I don't do readings anymore because to me, I can do a reading and I give you all this amazing information about yourself and you go off and you don't do anything with it or it doesn't change anything, so to speak. When we can use it along with EFT, we can be very specific with our tapping to kind of know what the shadows are, to know where certain things are playing up. Like, of course you have these perfectionist tendencies because you have this, like, of course this makes sense. Another thing is like, I work with a lot of projectors and they tend to have, at least the ones I've worked with, the worst inner critics that I've ever seen. They are so hard on themselves. I have a son that's a projector and spot on. So knowing that, I can not only validate them, but be like, hey, you're not alone. Like, I see this in a lot of other people. So it just gives that understanding and permission that we think something's wrong with us, that I can't change this, or we think there's something wrong with us that I can't just be this way. And maybe you're not meant to be. And also understanding those shadows so that we can tap through them then in a way that speaks to your design. So it's kind of using both of them in that way.
That's so interesting. I love that. So when I took my human design, so there's how many, are there five?
Five types. Yep.
Five types. So I'm a manifesting generator, and it's interesting because then I want to be doing all the things and going. And I have learned how to slow down and bring myself back a bit. But if I look at like some of the stories are like, well, moms are supposed to be at home with their kids full time. Why can't I just be satisfied with staying at home with my kids full time? And even just putting my judgment on myself as a mother that way, it's like, Nikki, you are a manifesting generator. You need a lot of things going on. So if you work 20 hours a week, that is okay. And so I've had, like you were saying, just allowing yourself to be like, that's actually how I was created. And that's okay. I'm going to be different than a lot of other people around me. And I'm happiest when I am doing a lot of different things.
Yeah. Yes. And my needs are different. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. And when things like perfectionism show up or worthiness shows up, it's like, oh, I can pinpoint like this is coming from here. And it's like, well, there's a reason that I'm reacting the way I'm reacting. And I have a choice to go to the higher expression of that energy, right? Like everything and nothing in, you know, human design has to be this rule book or this dogma that we call. It's just an exploration, like this deep discovery, this deep exploration. And it just creates space for new possibilities. Like if this were true for me, right? Like if it was true that I need to do all these other things, could I then be okay with the fact that I have the desire to do all these other things? Like it just creates this openness to consider different things, to understand different things.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So it sounds like you use human design to kind of identify what the shadows or the triggers are for your client and understand who they are on a deeper level. And then you use tapping to maybe release some of those reactions that they're not loving.
Yes. And it goes both ways. Sometimes we'll start with an issue or a trigger tapping. And then as we're doing it and things come up, I'll peek over at their design and see right where that's coming from. So it's kind of, it goes both ways because sometimes what we think is, you know, we'll start working on one thing that they think is the issue. And that leads us down this path of like peeling back the layers of the onion, so to speak, to these deeper things. And then I can see where the conditioning came into. And then gene keys can be a phenomenal resource as well. So gene keys can give the pathway for deconditioning.
Okay.
So I use them in conjunction. A lot of people are like either human design or gene keys. I like them together. And because human design on its own can just be very overwhelming. Where do I start? Where do I look? How do I understand this? It could be like, okay, we'll take projectors. Okay, I'm supposed to wait for the invitation. What does that even mean? And how do I do that? And every time I do that, I get this feeling in my body, right? And I could tap on that all day. But if I do gene keys and follow the golden path of the deconditioning, I feel like we just begin to naturally more live our design and be open to that because we've done the deconditioning. But if we just try to like step in and do. So human design is seen as more of like the masculine, right? The doing, the things you can do each day, where the gene keys is seen as more of the feminine, the introspection, the internal journey I need to go on to then really discover who I am. So I like the two together personally.
Oh, that's so interesting. So what is gene keys? You said it's a way, a kind of a path of deconditioning.
Yeah. So gene keys came about. So Richard Rudd is the founder, transmitter of the gene keys. And he was a student of human design for a long time. And then he left human design, and it wasn't necessarily an amicable separation. So which is why you don't see the two together a lot, right? So they created separation because it wasn't amicable. And so the gene keys uses the Chinese I Ching. So it uses similar ancient knowledge, the planets when you were born, but it creates this path. So there's 11 spheres or so there's 64 gene keys, and those are the same as the gates in human design. And then he doesn't use all of the planets, but the planets he uses create this pathway through your psyche. So it'll start with like deconditioning in your physical body, and then it deconditions in your emotional body, and then it deconditions in your mental body, and it takes you on these pathways. And there's 11 spheres, and each sphere is like an aspect of your life that you can go deeper on. And what I like about the gene keys is it takes the gate, so to speak, and it gives you a trinity. So it'll be like every shadow has a gift. So rather than just saying this is the balanced expression, this is the unbalanced expression, it says this is the shadow tendency. And then the city is like the enlightened state, and we get there through the gift of. So for example, my life's work is your first sphere. And that's like what you're here to do in the world, but it's really about the quality of consciousness with which you do it. So for me, my shadow is mediocrity, which is like living by the rules, being with the status quo. It's kind of like what society puts us in the box that we are meant to live in, right? So that everyone is homogenous. Well, my city. So my enlightened state is exquisiteness, which is like, you're just your own. There's nothing that's mediocre about you, so to speak. And the path through that is style. So it's basically finding your own style, being in your own style. And so it gives this path through that. So it gives this journey. And then in between the spheres are these pathways. So for example, the life's work, the first pathway is the pathway of challenge, and it goes to what's called your evolution, which is where I have to grow in order to access my gift. And the shadows will basically almost like put up a roadblock on that pathway, where the gifts raise your consciousness. So because there's these spheres that you get to actually like deeply focus on, it can create a much, I think, a quicker self-realization journey. And then you have these pathways that you go on. But then I take it and then apply it to human design. So like, if my life's work, so to speak, so for me, my life's work is on a defined center in a channel. It's going to be very consistent energy for me that I know. However, if I have a client whose life's work is on an undefined center, then they're not going to be consistent in it. So their awareness of the energy is going to be different. And so I play with both of them together to help clients move forward. Because I think what the masculine and feminine should work in team, right? Or work in conjunction with each other. And so that's kind of the journey I've been on exploring clients. So there's three sequences. The first one is the same as your incarnation cross in human design. It's your activation sequence. It's your genius sequence. It's how you activate your primal gifts. And then the second one is your Venus sequence, which is all about relationships and love. It's you in relationships. And what that is, it's all your, basically your childhood conditioning. It goes through the different phases, like how you were conditioned from 0 to 7, you know, 8 to 14, 15 to 21, and undoes that. And then the third one is the pearl sequence, which is all about unlocking your prosperity, which is basically how you are in community, how you are in service to the whole.
So this is incredible. You always go down the first path, like that first pathway you talked about first, and then the next one sequence, like do you always do it 1, 2, 3?
It depends. You know, sometimes To be honest, the Gene Keys is something I have been newly kind of bringing in. Yeah. So I have like started some because it does unlock, like each layer unlocks the one before. So to really get the full effects of the journey, it would be unlocking one at a time. However, okay, with clients who may not be ready to go there, you can also use it to be very specific into an area of life that they're struggling. So if it's something that's coming up that I can clearly see where it's coming and I can see the shadow, gift, and city of the certain sphere that it's in, we might go right to that one and kind of contemplate that sphere. Okay. In how it's relating to their life at that moment, recognizing that there are these other layers to be able to fully move through the shadow gift.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you had talked a little bit about what we've taken on, you know, in 0 to 7, 8 to 14, whatnot. I kind of want to focus on that 0 to 7 mark because that's been talked about in childhood. And you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but we learn a lot of our core beliefs by the time we're 7.
Yes.
Yeah. So can you explain that a little bit more?
So our prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain that has rational thought, that can begin to decipher truth from lie, that doesn't even start coming online till age 7, and it's not even mature until late 20s. Okay, so the first 7 years, we are living in our body. We are living for what feels good in our body. And the new research on trauma shows that anything that activated the stress response in our body gets laid down as trauma, right? Which is why I say little trauma or big trauma. So little trauma is, you know, the little things we could go through every day where we develop these beliefs. And so these beliefs come from what I had to do to get more love, belonging, right? And the parts of me that I needed to suppress. And this is where our shadows come in. So a shadow part of you is, if I learned that being looking out for myself was considered selfish, and that was the worst possible thing I could be, according to the response I got from my parents when I didn't want to share, I'm going to take in the belief that I need to always give to everybody else, so to speak. So it's not like a core belief that can be verbalized many times. It's a core belief that just is in there, that is the truth of who we are. It's the truth of how we show up in the world, which is why it can be so hard and sticky to get to them, because they're pre-reasoning, pre-understanding. Mm-hmm. They just live there. And our subconscious mind, which is basically our first 7 years, we are in a state of almost hypnosis. Like our brain waves are almost in a state of hypnosis. And so we are literally soaking up and taking in how to be in this world, what's acceptable in this world, the belief structures of our family, our community, our, you know, our ethnic group, right? We are taking all of those in as truth. And until we go on the journey to question, it just becomes how we show up in the world. So there's a quote, and I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember the exact quote, but it's along the lines of, we continue to have these experiences every day, and without awareness, we simply call them fate, right? Like we keep having the same experiences over and over again, thinking that it's just our life. It's just our experiences. It's just who we are or what we're meant to have. But we never stop to question, you know, if that's true.
Right. Because we don't even know to question that if it's true, because exactly. It is true to us.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think that's why internal work can be so difficult, is because it feels like we're breaking down the literal truth of our beings, of our lives. And so it feels, yes. I don't know if dangerous is the word, but it just feels so weird.
It feels unsafe. It feels completely unsafe. If I learned as a child that I was not allowed to have boundaries, right? If I was, you know, if I was punished by my door being taken off my bedroom, if I was, whatever the case was, I wasn't allowed to say no. I wasn't any of those things. I'm going to really struggle. It's going to feel incredibly unsafe to me to hold boundaries with my children. Okay. Actually, you know, this journey is just peeling back layers. And I had a realization just actually recently. I thought, I mean, I was a parent coach. I have to be a master at setting boundaries with my children, right? No, I'm really good at negotiating with my children, because what I actually realized was I don't tolerate uncomfortable feelings of anyone's at any time, including my own or my children. So I would negotiate and kind of constantly be creating these inner compromises with myself so that I could avoid the uncomfortable feelings over and over and over again, and wondering why I was doing so much, why my needs couldn't be met. Well, because I could not stand their disappointment. I could not say what needed to be said or done, even in a calm way, and holding that boundary. Because so, like, for example, last week we were in the car and my son wanted to stop at the Lego store and I was tired. We were out. I wanted to just go home. And so it's these conflicting needs. He has this, you know, I have this need to make him happy, but I have this need to just rest. And without acknowledging those needs, all I feel is discomfort that I'm not allowed to disappoint anyone. Mm-hmm. And so I want to get angry at him for asking me to take him versus owning the fact that I have this need too. And so this is where, if my belief is it's not safe to disappoint others, I'm not allowed to disappoint others, I'm going to have all of these conflicts all day long. And I'm going to attribute it to, you know, parenting is just hard, or life is just hard, or, you know, I just, you know, whatever the case may be, versus just owning the fact that, oh, there's these conflicting needs and let's talk about it. And I can hold, like, you know, one of the things I started saying to my kids in those, like, oh, you're disappointed in me. Like, that's okay. Like, I get that. Like, just owning that, which just shifted. I did it with my husband one time. He wanted me to do something and didn't do it. And I was just like, oh, wow, you're really disappointed in me right now. Like, I accept that. And he was just like, it just diffused the whole situation. But having that awareness, and again, that lived in my body, I had no awareness. I just thought that this was fate, right? This was how it was for me. Boundaries were just always going to be hard. I have an open heart center. I have an open head center, right? So this is going to be hard for me, not realizing, like, no, I'm doing everything in my power to avoid feeling uncomfortable. Yeah. And so that's what's making it hard.
Wow. That's so incredible. And I think this week it reminds us that the work is never done. And we just continue, like you had said earlier, the onion, we just continue to peel back that onion. And often I have been like, I thought I worked with this so much already. Patience is one of my biggest ones, you know, patience. And in so many ways I've gotten better. And we're also trying to build a house right now. And it keeps kind of getting like a couple months later. And I'm just like, and not even at anyone in particular, I just wanted to start. And then it's like, oh, how could this be testing my patience yet again? And how are you going to respond to that instead of trying to force something that's not working a timeline?
And also asking, like, okay, what is driving the, like, what am I needing here? I'm needing to feel settled with my family. Yeah. I'm needing the next step, you know, to move forward on this. Right. And so when we can acknowledge the need that's driving that impatience, it's like, well, it makes perfect sense that I'm impatient. You know, I have five children that I want to be in this new house and be settled in. Like, of course it makes sense that I'm impatient. And so we can give ourselves kind of permission for those feelings as well. And recognizing that at each stage of life, at each age of our children, we are going to be triggered in different ways, because we are going to be triggered, like, you know, my child's, you know, going to be 13 next month. And so I'm going to be triggered by things in him that happened when I was 13. Right. Yeah. And so, or I'm going to be triggered as we grow, the triggers become different. Like, well, I thought, like you said, I thought I worked on that. Well, I did. And, you know, I use the analogy with my clients, because they're like, well, when am I healed? I'm like, okay, do you ever go to the gym and say to your trainer, I've done my last workout for my life. I am strong forever. I never need to work out again. No, it's like, personal development and doing this work, this inner work, is like kind of going to the gym for the physical body. It is deconditioning ourselves from our patterns. And those patterns are going to keep coming up because we are living different experiences. We are interacting with different people. We are growing businesses. We are all these things. And we're going to bump up against things in slightly different ways that are going to trigger us.
Right. Yeah. It's incredible. So we've talked a lot about kind of how parents can do some of this work or kind of where to start. I'm also curious. So with all of us, this generation, this day and age, we talk a lot about doing the work. How can we be better parents? How can we gentle parent? How can we set boundaries? All of these things, hoping that maybe we can bring some light to all this. But we also understand that we're not perfect. And so I get curious about how you approach that too. Is like, okay, well, now I just feel like I can see all the areas that maybe I'm failing in my kids, or yes, I'm trying to do better, but how can I explain to them that like nobody is perfect and encourage them to also do the work?
Encouraging your children, you mean, or?
Yeah. Or just like acknowledging to them that like, hey, I probably have screwed up in ways. And I think sometimes like, I have a few thoughts, I guess, on this too, is just like apologizing. And like you were saying earlier, like you're allowed to be disappointed in me. I think that we become more human to them. So we're not putting ourselves up on these pedestals anymore, hopefully, but also like, I may have screwed up and you get to do that work for like, if I yelled at you a lot when you were a kid and you need to change that, like no harm done, right? There's going to be maybe work that you need to do when you are older as well.
Yes. And what I say to my clients for that is our children are going to have their own stuff to deal with. We don't want them to carry ours too. That's it.
Yeah.
So it's owning that, you know, and just being honest, right? We are going to mess up, and it's apologizing and then letting it go, doing whatever you need to do to let it go, realizing that guilt just keeps us in the same pattern because guilt is a low vibration energy. It's just going to keep us in the same pattern. And guilt tells our children that we can't move on. We cannot forgive ourselves, right? The more we forgive ourselves and move on, the more our children say, oh, wait, I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to show up. I can apologize. I can own, you know, that I did this, and recognize again that the maturity levels, that's going to be different. And the way you own it with them is going to be different. The way you apologize is going to be different. But it's just like, wow, you know, I mean, just the other day, I was trying to deal with something with like I don't even know what I was dealing on the computer. It was not going well. My son comes in, I snap at him. And later I was like, I went up to him a few minutes, you know, a little bit later. And I was just like, hey, bud, I did not handle that well. I was in the middle of a situation and you didn't deserve for me to talk to you like that when I was frustrated. And we just own it. And rather than, because what happens is when those moments happen and we are so stuck in the shame and the guilt that we can't authentically own it, we are just, again, perpetuating it. And often that keeps us from apologizing in a way that is authentic, which then tells our children like, oh, because they will never make us wrong. They will make themselves wrong. It's not mom did this. It's like, I'm so bad that mom yelled, right? So, and when we're inauthentic, our energy speaks louder than our words ever do. So they will pick up on that. And authentically apologizing means my child may not be ready to forgive me when I apologize, and allowing that space for them to have their experience and not needing their apology to let it go.
Right. The apologizing is what frees you. It's like, I am so sorry I acted that way. And I can understand if you're still feeling frustrated with me.
Yeah.
Because we feel so ready to apologize to adults, or, you know, sometimes it's like, well, we can apologize to adults, but for some reason we've never thought to apologize to our kids for the way that we treat them or act. But like, why can we take out all of our anger and frustration on our kids? But if we do it to an adult, it's unacceptable.
I think in many ways we are generation upon generation upon generation of surviving. Right. And this is where you have to decide that this pattern stops with me. Because, well, how many times, you know, have I heard like, well, you know, I yell at my children, but I was beaten, right? Or so it's not like, it's not as bad, but we're not doing the work to actually like detangle. So yes, that's better, because as society changes, certain things become less acceptable, but yes, for for some reason, we all forget what it's like to be a child, and the expectations we put on child often, this is another part of parenting, more often than not, I would have to probably put it in the 99 percentile range. The expectations we're placing on a child that they cannot meet, they are not age appropriate expectations. And often we just continue to drill down on those expectations rather than consider if my child can actually meet them, if what I'm asking of them is valid and possible and necessary. Okay. And so, but we often just continue to, again, perpetuate this cycle because we are holding generations of, you know, back when, you know, you had to work in the field all day to survive, children mm-hmm. had to just sit and be quiet or help or do whatever, right? They needed, that was necessary for survival. And so, you know, the giving them the love and the attention that they needed wasn't available to me if we wanted to live. Right. And so that is built into the cells of our body. We carry that forward generation after generation after generation until we decide to go a different path. And the thing is, I was just reading this the other day, actually. Fascinating to me. With human design, mm-hmm. we get our energy, and I'm paraphrasing this, but the general theme will be there. We get our energy from our grandparents. Okay. So I hold the energy of like my grandma or my grandfather. Well, if I'm going to trigger the same things in my mother, or that I'm going to like, so if my grandfather treated my mother a certain way, so say she yelled a lot, so that she's going to struggle to set boundaries with people. Well, I'm going to trigger her in the same way. So she's going to react to that. So what research has shown is that actually it goes from like authoritative, like dictatorship parenting, and then passive parenting. And then the next, like it alternates generations. And part of that comes from the way that the energy works in us and how it triggers our parents to respond to the energy that they're being, you know, triggered by. So for example, so she was always yelled at and had to, you know, perfectionism set in and afraid to set boundaries. So she's then afraid to set boundaries with the child, but then I need boundaries to feel secure and safe. So then I become I become authoritarian parent with my child.
But she was passive to you.
Right. And then my children become passive to theirs because, right. So it just continues. That's what research has shown. And I just recently read how it shows that in human design with how it goes generation to generation. And so what we often can miss in trying to change how we parent is several things. One is thinking that gentle parenting means our child is never uncomfortable, right? Or that we don't set boundaries. And often that comes from, again, because of that authoritative parenting we went under. So we think we're setting boundaries, but we're really not, right? It's not about our child's comfort. The second thing is, if we've been parenting one way and we're changing how we're parenting, our children's behavior is going to get worse before it changes because they have this inner and outer world. And in their inner world tells them, if I do this, mom yells. And then their outer world matches that. Now, if we're like, okay, I'm doing the work, I'm not going to yell. Their child is like, just wants balance, not consciously. They just want balance. So they're going to up their behavior to get you to yell. Right. And so it will take you consistently showing up differently over time for them to create a new inner world of who you are. And so often people are like, well, I tried that parenting, it didn't work for us. Well, because there is, and that period can be a year, that right. period. I mean, it takes time for that relationship to change.
Yeah. Even if you are being a safer parent, they're like, who is this?
Right. It doesn't feel safe to them.
Yeah, yes. Because they know what to expect, even if it isn't like physically safe or emotionally safe, they know what to expect.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Do you have anything else that you want to kind of go into right now?
I mean, I think we've talked about so many different things today, but just to kind of bring it all back is that you know, being that the invitation was to really focus on parenting, it's recognizing that when you are triggered by your child, it is an invitation to go within. If you are reacting, rather than, it's not a light switch. You can't just say, I'm going to stop yelling, because something is behind the yelling. There is a reason that you're yelling. And typically you can only suppress it for so long. You can only, you know, I used to say, like, patience is just a Band-Aid that you try to put on the outside. And if you're simply trying to have enough patience, it's going to wear out. Just like we have decision fatigue, I think we have patience fatigue, right? It's just going to wear out. When you're sick, when you're sleep deprived, when you're overworked, all of those things, your capacity is going to go down. So your ability to parent in those instances is going to go down. And it doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. It's an opportunity for you to say, like, take a breath, take that pause for yourself and be like, okay, what has changed?
Right.
I know that when I'm a stressed mood and I'm barking, like, all of a sudden my kids are like off the walls and I'm like, oh, it's my energy. Mm-hmm. Because as they're developing, they are just sponges for our energy, and our energy will speak louder. This is why if it's bedtime and on the surface, I'm like, okay, honey, let's go to bed. And underneath, I'm like, just go to bed, right? They're going to get chaotic because our energy is chaotic underneath and they don't understand it. They don't have a language for it. They can just feel it. So this is where we have to recognize our needs, the triggers that we have, and bring curiosity to the situation. Because in any moment, curiosity can be the bridge to connection, whether it's connection with ourselves, whether it's connection to my child to understand. And it's the antidote to judgment.
Yeah.
Right. So if I can bring that curiosity and compassion in, I mean, a lot of times when I tap with clients, it's, you know, it might just be, even though I just yelled at my child, I have compassion for myself and what I'm going through right now. Like, yeah. Even though I feel like the worst mom ever right now, I'm choosing to have compassion for myself. I'm choosing to forgive myself. Because one of the things with EFT is we give voice to all the things in our head that we're trying to suppress, right? We don't want to feel like we're a bad mom. So we just keep trying to push that down, but that's really what we think of ourselves. And until we give voice to that and shift that thought while also tapping our nervous system,
yeah,
it's still there. It's still there. And we live out our beliefs. So if underneath I believe I'm a bad mom,
yeah,
then it's going to be really hard for me to stop yelling, because in my mind, you know, quote unquote, bad moms,
yeah,
right?
You're just confirming the underneath beliefs.
And there's no bad parents. And I know there's some parents that can do some really awful things. Hurt people.
Right.
And everyone is doing the best they can. This is not to justify abuse. This is not to justify anything, but to recognize that hurt people. And to the extent that they were hurt, they will hurt another. And until we break these cycles, until we make parenting where children are our equals in respect, and they receive our unconditional love, we are going to keep perpetuating all of the pain that we currently see in the world. Because while our children are not our equals in experience, in knowledge, they deserve our unconditional love and respect. And we often say, well, I love my child. There's no question that we love our children. Yeah. But if I'm putting conditions on that love of who they need to be or what they need to do to receive my love, it's conditional. And that can be really hard to hear. It can be a really tough mirror to look into, because we all received conditional love in most cases.
Right, right.
And so conditional love to us is love. I want to teach my child. There's a difference between teaching a new behavior and teaching it through the withdrawal of love or affection.
Right. Or with threat.
Yes.
Which we do, I think, subconsciously as well, you know, asking our kid to do something or holding a boundary instead of threatening a child with, like, if you don't do this, I'm going to do this. It's like, okay, I just saw a post about the difference between a threat and a limit. So, like, okay, we've reached our limit for watching TV today. We're going to turn it off in 5 minutes, versus like, if you don't turn off the TV right now, I'm going to take away X. which was like a very clear way of, I was like, oh, that's so helpful, because it's a clear understanding of like, of you absolutely. Yes. Like, I think like you said earlier, some people have a different definition of gentle parenting. Like, I can't ever set boundaries, or I can't ever hold my child accountable, or they can't ever have uncomfortable feelings. And that's not true. Right. You still need to set the boundaries and keep your children safe.
Yeah.
But you can set them lovingly and then have limits and have a clear boundary with love. Without
threat. And you know, as Dr. Becky Kennedy says, is that when we set a boundary, it's not about what we want our child to do, it's about what we're going to do. So in your example, it's, you know, okay, we've reached our limit on TV. In 5 minutes, you can turn it off, or I will turn it off for you.
Yes.
Because the difference being is, one, a threat is just an attempt to gain control over something we know is not in our control. And two, we think we're setting a boundary by saying, okay, in 5 minutes, we have to turn the TV off. And then we come in and nag. And then we come in, okay, I said to turn the TV off. But we're giving our child all of the power in that situation. Either they turn it off or they don't. And I just have to ramp up myself to make myself the big giant to make them. And then I have to use threats. But it could be that, you know, I step in, and whether it's, unplugging the TV, whether it's taking the streaming device out, whether it's taking the remote and turning it off myself, whatever those cases may be, the difference is I'm not doing it in anger. If my child's unable to turn the TV off, I'm like, oh, okay, interesting. My child cannot turn the TV off right now. I need to step in and be the leader that they're asking me to be to set this limit.
And by doing that, you're not afraid of their reaction. You know, they might have a meltdown.
Yes.
But what I've noticed in my own self is like, if I set that lovingly, like if I'm just like, I'm going to turn the TV off, like you said, without anger, I don't have a reaction. I'm just like, okay, time to be done. They might cry for like 2 minutes, and then they're like, you know, they go find something to do. They go find some toys. They lay down, they rest, and there's no issue, because I'm not making it mean anything about them if they don't know how to turn the TV off after 5 minutes.
Or making it mean something about myself, or yes, whatever the case may be. It's all about when we can, our power comes from standing our ground and holding that limit. It doesn't come from force.
Right.
Because, you know, force creates counterforce, whether that counterforce is in the moment with your child or whether it's the cooperation you get at bedtime, there's always a counterforce to that. Right. And so if we can hold our ground, and our power is in setting the limit in a way that is grounded and loving, then that keeps our child open to that love.
Yeah.
Threats of any kind are, I want to give you so much pain that you're going to do what I say.
Yeah. Out of fear.
Rewards are, I'm going to give you so much pleasure that you'll do what I say. Right. Like it's, but it's fear either way. It's fear I don't get the thing, or fear the thing happens to me.
Yeah.
And fear is not respect. And that's what we grew up thinking, that, well, I want my child to respect me. And often that is fear. The same with, I want my child to listen to me. That's obey. Like, what you're asking is not listening, it's obeying. What you're asking is not respect, it's fear. And those are very different relationships that you're going to have with your child as they grow into their teen years. And if your child is a teen, there's always room for change. There's always room for growth. It's going to affect your relationship long term if that is your go-to. Because if your go-to is to continue to use threats or rewards, it's a very conditional relationship. And when you don't have a reward that's big enough or a threat that's large enough, your child's just not going to care what you do.
Yeah. And if you want to create deep connected relationships with your kids where you both respect each other, you can change those things, like you said. And this is kind of how you do it, by having that unconditional love and just setting the boundaries without anger, and kind of digging into your own triggers and whatnot. And I remember when I kind of shifted, and like, I respect my kids now, and they respect me, and I can see the difference in their eyes, in their actions, and how they talk to me, all of those things. And they were little when I started this work, but like, you know that feeling when you yell at your kid and they look at you with these big eyes and you're like, oh my gosh, they're scared of me right now and something has to change. I hate that feeling in myself. I don't want my kids to be scared of me. If I want my kids to come to me when they're teenagers, when they're adults with hard things, they need to be able to come to me with hard things right now too, and respect me and feel open enough to me or safe enough with me that they can do that.
Yep. They need to both believe you have their back, you're on their team, and you're the leader that they need. Yeah, like they need us to be the leader. We have the experience and the knowledge. They need boundaries to feel safe. Mm-hmm. They need boundaries to explore the world, knowing that we've got their back. But if they're afraid of exploring those boundaries, or they're afraid to come to us, that's going to limit. So then they become adults with very small comfort zones, very restrictive comfort zones that makes it very hard for them to step out. And that's a lot of the work I do with clients too, is not just, you know, things that come from our childhood, because to show up for our children with unconditional love, we have to find unconditional love within ourselves. And that means forgiving ourselves, having compassion for ourselves, recognizing we're not perfect. We're going to slip up. We're going to yell. Mm-hmm. It's as we learn to regulate our nervous systems, it's like a muscle that builds. We get better and better and better. But in the beginning, as I tell my clients, in the beginning, most of the work you do is going to be in reflection. Like, oh, wow, I yelled at my child today. What was going on for me? And then you begin to catch it in the moment where you're like, you can pause. But there's a lot of reflection time that has to happen before you can pause. And there's a lot of pausing before you begin to embody a new you. Yes. So we often feel like, I'm just going to flip the switch. I'm going to stop yelling. My child's going to respond and be, you know, we're going to have this great gentle parenting relationship. I did the same thing with homeschooling. I have this vision of like kumbaya. I don't know. We come together. My children hate school. They hate it. They don't love it. Which is one of the reasons we keep homeschooling, because I can work with that. I can find things that interest them. I can do it at times of day that work for them. But you know, I had to work through that disappointment and letting that go, that like, I mean, I could read and learn new things all day. Like I'm loving teaching them, because I'm like, oh my God, all this history that I totally forgot about. Right.
Yeah.
But they just want to get through it, and they don't want to be there. And so, but acknowledging that that can be true for them, and it doesn't have to mean that I'm doing a bad job. It doesn't have to mean that I'm failing. It doesn't have to mean that any of those things. So when I can accept that in myself, I can accept that they're going to have a different experience from me. And that comes back to that unconditional love for myself. Like, this doesn't mean that I'm doing anything wrong. No. And I can have compassion for myself, that I have this beautiful picture of what I want it to be. And it's nothing like that. And it's all good. It's all good.
It's a change, because I think when we release that judgment, it makes the change easier. I'm like, oh yeah, that was unrealistic for us, but oh well, I'll just change
it. And interestingly enough, when I finally accepted that, they show up to school with totally different attitudes. Oh, amazing how that happens, right? Amazing. Like, they still don't love it. Or like sometimes my son will just be in this mood, like, I don't want to do this. And I'll be like, okay, fine. You know what? Don't do it. Just don't. Right. And he's like, Who are you and what are you doing? And then he just like sits down and does it, like, right? Like, and I'm not even attached. Like, I'm not saying it like sarcastically. Right. I'm not saying it as a threat. I'm like, literally, like, okay, like, I'm not going to fight you on this. Like, you know, don't do it. Knowing that we have a whole lot of stuff to make up. It's not like we're giving up school, but it's holding the boundaries where I need to hold them and letting them go where I don't. You know, some people might say picking their battles, but I don't like to use the word battle, because then we enter the battle all the time. But it's really just about, where do I need to set the boundary? The boundary is, this is the schoolwork that has to be done this week. We can be flexible in how that looks and how that plays out. You don't have to love it. Do you need extra support today because you're just not in the mood and you need me to like sit with you, versus me saying, you know, you're in seventh grade now, you should be able to do this yourself, versus like, oh, wow, today you're having a rough day and you just need me to sit there and do it with you. Okay, great. Like, having that flexibility, but a lot of it was letting go of this vision. And so a lot of that is just getting really curious about the vision we hold for ourselves as a parent and who we are supposed to be and how we should be acting, which doesn't allow us to accept who we are.
Yeah. Or our children, accept who our children
exactly.
are.
Exactly. Exactly. We need them to be a certain way so that we can feel good about ourselves, when really it's finding that fulfillment within ourselves that then shines like a light out of us to allow our children to accept themselves.
Yeah. The more that I look at my kids, I'm like, it's just incredible how they're all their own little individual self. And like, my job is to raise them, but not tell them who they are. And it's just incredible because I'm like, they all have their different experiences and the different way they process things and their different passions. And it's just, and they're like nothing like me. Yeah. In ways, of course they are, but in certain ways, it's just like, wow, like I just got the privilege to hang out with these people for 18 years.
Yeah. And knowing, for me, knowing their human design made that journey so much smoother. Yeah. I have one son who has a defined head and mind. He's going to see things in a very specific worldview that I'm going to struggle to open him up to possibility.
Yeah.
You know, my other son is basically open. He's like a demi reflector. So he has one unconscious channel and that's it in his whole chart. So he's very open. So in a way he's a very easy child because he's very easy to quote unquote manipulate.
Yeah.
So I have to be very aware of that. So I don't use that power to get what I want, where my other son can stick his feet in cement and I'm not moving him. And so the approach is very, very different with each child, and knowing their design has significantly allowed me to approach them in a way that speaks to them, so to speak.
Definitely. And just for our listeners too, I also read a book called The Child Whisperer that also has types, and that really helped me with my kids too. But I was going to lead from the human design perspective anyway. Yep. Where did you learn about all the human design, and is there a specific book that you use?
I've taken multiple courses, multiple books. Sure. It can be a very confusing system when you just look at it. There's tons of resources online. You can run your chart for free. I think it's myhumandesign.com or swordofspiritual.com is another one that you can run your chart in. The human design coach, Emma Dunwoody, she's excellent. She has a membership. You can run your chart with her and she sends you a lot of emails to help you understand it. Christy Ng, INGE, is another phenomenal website who just breaks down human design in very easy to understand ways. I think if you were to get a whole book, it could just be very overwhelming. Yeah. You can absolutely get a reading that can start you on your exploration. Just recognize, like, and I do that for people where they're like, just help me understand so I know which direction to go. I do that. It's just that you have to understand nothing's going to change just from having a reading. Like, you need to take that information and explore it further versus working with somebody long-term to like really go deep and understand and undo the layers. But I think those are several good sites. Sort of Spiritual, if you want to go deep, she does HD School, which is a whole program. But I don't think, again, you need to learn the whole system. If you just want to harness the power of human design in your life and your family's life, I don't think you need to learn the whole system. So having somebody that can direct you in a specific way can shorten that overwhelm.
Yeah. And I love Instagram for this too. Like you had mentioned a couple of Instagram people, because you can learn it in like short little bits and you're like, oh, that's resonating with me today. I'm going to go look into that and see what that is.
Yes.
I had an app that was really great. Some human design app, but I like put all my families in there and then I could see like their big themes. And then if I saw an Instagram post about like a specific part of the human design, I could go look that specific part up.
Yes.
Which is really great.
Yeah. Yes, that's a great way to do it. Because like I said, if you just look at it and the totality of it, it can be very overwhelming and you don't know where to look. So having that opportunity where you're just like, oh, I just want to explore what this means or what this means in small chunks can break it down for you in a way that you can actually bring it into your life and relationships versus just being knowledge. It can be something that you bring in.
Yeah. So just if people are listening, like, oh, this is really cool. Now they have a few different areas of kind of where to start versus like get a book and it's just like so much information.
Yes, there is a book. There is several, I think, Parenting with Human Design or Parenting by Design books. I have one of them. It was good. It's just books are only going to be, you know, so specific. And I think you can go deeper into certain areas, because a book is going to have the general stuff for everybody because it's going to go over everything, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
So if you can be like, my child's a projector, and I can go to the go to somebody on Instagram who speaks to projectors, and I can really understand the projector experience, or I can really understand the manifesting generator experience and things like that. Or I can really understand having an open emotional solar plexus. I can really understand. And then I can kind of bring that awareness in very small pieces versus trying to read a whole book, which I still think would be overwhelming.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Well, my kiddos just got home, so I'm going to try to this up.
Yes.
Do you have anything else real quick to add before we finish up this episode?
No, I think if anyone has a question about anything I shared today, my website is in transition, so I wouldn't say go there, but you can email me, Irene@IreneMcKennaCoaching.com with any questions that you have or any, you know, curiosities about anything that we talked about today to go further. People are welcome to email me. Other than that, it's just been a pleasure to come on here. It's been a while since I've had these conversations. It just reminds me how much I love talking about parenting, because I think that we are in such an age where we can affect so much change, you know, in the world. There was an Eller and Ost quote where it's like, rather than try to toughen our children up for a tough world, what if we teach our children, I'm paraphrasing again, teach our children to lead with love, and then we bring more love into the world. We bring more forgiveness into the world. We bring more emotional regulation into the world. And that begins with us. We have to decide that it's going to be different than us. Whatever our children's ages are, we can start now, and we can do, quote unquote, do the work on ourselves, do the self-discovery, do the self-realization on ourselves to be able to show up differently.
Yes, absolutely. I can definitely hear all the passion and just how much knowledge you have about all of this.
And that, my friends, is a wrap on this episode of the Journey to Wellness podcast. I would love it if you could take the time to head over and give us a review on what you thought of this podcast. And if you have any questions or need to find anything, you can check out the show notes, or you can send us a DM as well. We are so thankful you're here, and we look forward to seeing you next time.